This is Tax Update for Saturday, July 16th, 2006. Welcome to Tax Update. The Tax Update podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research to confirm items raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast in this document may be reproduced freely so long as no fee is charged for the use of the document or the podcast. Such prohibited use would include using this podcast or the document as part of a CP presentation for which a fee is being charged without prior permission. The podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters, as well as access to a library of useful information for tax practitioners who subscribe to their services. Again, you can visit them on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. This week, we look at reasonable cause for late filing a tax return. The reasonable cause happening to be you didn't late file the return. Every so often, we run into a case in the tax law that convinces you of the general insanity of what we face under Chapter 20, under Title 26 of the United States Code, otherwise known as the Internal Revenue Code. This week, we're going to take a look at a case where we discover how important it is to understand some of the nuances involved with the tax law, as well as understand that sometimes by looking at your client's problem in a slightly different perspective, you can hit a solution to a problem that appeared insolvable due to another piece of authority you had discovered that seemed to put you out into a problem area where you couldn't consider the items that you had available to use. This week's case is the case of Gregorian versus Commissioner, and that's Tax Court Summary Case 2006-99. Now, this was a case that involved the specific issue of the late filing penalty, among other items. And that is the penalty under the tax law that provides if you file your return late, basically after the date prescribed by law, you basically get charged the 5% penalty per month that we're all aware of for the late filing based upon the tax that is due. In Gregorian's case, the problem was their return was examined. After the exam, it was determined they owed tax. However, for the year in question, it appeared the tax return had been mailed at the last minute, mailed not using certified mail, registered mail, or any other form of mailing that served as statutory proof or proof under the regulations we find under 7502. Nor even does it appear do they have any sort of proof of the type that even the Ninth Circuit and the Eighth Circuit would recognize as proof of the application of the postmark. And the question becomes, how do we get this client out of the late filing penalty? And in this case, the tax court found a way to get the client out from under that penalty, a way that still essentially recognized the fact that under Section 7502, they had no proof of timely filing, and basically, according to the IRS position and the position of two circuits, they had no way of proving the return being filed, therefore the return was not filed on a timely basis, so they had a late filed return. Now, the penalty section that governs late filed return is Section 6651A1 is the area dealing with late filing of return. And if you take a look in the materials that we've given you, I've got on top of page 2 the actual provision in the code. Now, in general, we find that if you fail to file a return required under the authority of, and it keeps listing out various returns involved, unless it is shown, and an important portion is italicized in the text you should be looking at, unless it is shown that such failure is due to reasonable cause and not due to willful neglect, there shall be added to the tax essentially the 5% per month. Now, a key question becomes showing reasonable cause, not due to willful neglect. Regulation 301.6651-1C provides, in part, that except as provided in subparagraphs 3 and 4 of this paragraph B, which are not relevant for our purposes, a taxpayer who wishes to avoid the additional tax for failure to file a tax return or pay tax must make an affirmative showing of all facts alleged as a reasonable cause for his failure to file such return on time or pay such tax on time. Now, essentially, if it goes on and further on in that paragraph, it states, if the taxpayer exercised ordinary business care and prudence and was nevertheless unable to file the return within the prescribed time, then the delay is due to a reasonable cause. This particular provision will become important to us when we take a look at the facts and how we're going to deal with trying to get our poor little taxpayer here out from under the late filing penalty that they now are subject to. Now, let's do a little bit of review here. If you remember in a podcast from October 22nd of 2005, we went over the way you prove timely filing under Section 7502. The IRS position, as was noted at that time, is that essentially, unless you meet the statutory provisions of 7502, including those provisions found in the regulations that are authorized under the statute, unless you use one of those methods to prove timely filing, the IRS position is timely filing can only be proven if the IRS really has that document in their hand. So basically, if they lose it, you're out of luck. Or if the mail loses it, you're out of luck. The methods that are currently authorized to prove timely filing are registered mail, which is authorized specifically by the statute in 7502, certified mail, which is authorized via the regulations. The statute provides that the secretary shall provide regulations to tell us when certified mail will work. The secretary has provided those regulations, so certified mail generally works, as does the use of authorized third-party delivery services, again, specifically authorized via regulations, so you have to use the right ones, or electronic filing if you have the proof of electronic postmark. And if you go back to that October 22nd podcast, you'll find a pretty long discussion of exactly how you meet those criteria. But the bottom line is, the simplest way to meet the criteria for the U.S. mails is to have the receipt for certified or registered mail with the postmark date applied by the United States Postal Service employee. If that is done, then you have proof of timely filing, proof of timely application of the postmark, which essentially means the return is deemed filed. Now, as we discussed in the October 22nd podcast, in two circuits, the Second Circuit and the Sixth Circuit, we have the courts saying this provides the exclusive method for proving filing. If you cannot meet these tests, according to the Second and Sixth Circuits, in two separate cases that they studied, you cannot prove your return was timely filed. As we discussed at that time, the U.S. Supreme Court did not decide to take up either case. The taxpayers on losing appealed each of the cases in those two cases up the line to the United States Supreme Court. The Supreme Court denied certiorari in both cases. Now, in the Eighth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit and the tax court generally, though, we have a slightly more liberal standard. Those courts decided that you didn't have to solely prove that your tax return used the proof of your filing of your tax return by having the certified or registered mail. However, what they concentrate on is the application of the postmark in 7502A1. And the standard they apply is you can use any means possible to prove the postmark was applied, but you have to prove the postmark was applied. In both the Anderson and the Wood case, it was made clear that this would be a difficult standard to meet, that while it is somewhat more liberal than the standard that we find in the Second or Sixth Circuits, it clearly is not going to be good enough for your client simply to say, well, I took it down and I mailed it, nor for your client to have indirect evidence that they would have mailed the return on time. That is evidence, let's say, that the return was delivered to them by the preparer, that they have always filed on time, perhaps their state return, which was due at the same time, also got mailed on time. If you read the Wood and Anderson cases, it certainly appears the courts are saying that would not be sufficient proof to carry your burden, even in those two circuits which allow for a broader standard of proof. Now, let's consider the problems that the Gregorians have. In their case, they filed their tax return. In fact, what happened was they, in 2001, returned as year in question. In 2002, they extended their return all the way to the October 15th final due date. So they filed the first extension, filed the second extension, and then basically filed their return sometime before October 15th, at least according to their testimony. However, the IRS did not act on that return, which caused the taxpayers some concern because they were due a substantial refund. Because they had not heard anything from the IRS for a number of months, in July of 2003, the taxpayers sent a clearly marked duplicate copy to the Internal Revenue Service. The Internal Revenue Service received that return on July 16th of 2003. And that return became the return the IRS processed. Now, we don't know why that return wasn't processed. Was it lost in the U.S. mails? Did it get to the IRS? Did they lose it somehow in the processing system? Again, not really relevant. We don't know why, but all we know is a return was filed. It was filed in a form where we did not have proof. Why do I say that? Certainly appears, and the court indicates that they offered up no real proof of the filing, at least proof of the sort that would have rendered 7502 into the mix. Had 7502 been there and we had proof of filing, we wouldn't be discussing this. But at this point, we're still discussing it because they had no proof of timely filing that would meet the statutory authorities. Now, the court went on and noted, though, the copy of the return offered into evidence at trial bears the date of October 12, 2002 on the signature line for the petitioners, as well as the signature line of the return preparer. Now, it doesn't say if that was handwritten in or printed. It may have been printed, as many of us who do tax return processing know, many of our systems will go ahead and print that date. Nevertheless, there certainly was a date applied. The return also bears a bold stamp duplicate on the front page and at the bottom of the signature page. Now, the taxpayers, the Gregorians, contend that the return was mailed on or about the October 12th, which was within the extended date granted for filing. The IRS has no record of receiving the return on that date. Now, you have to realize at this point, we kind of now have the court agreeing the return was filed late. If you read the Gregorian case, you're going to find that nowhere does the court find the return was not late filed. It implicitly seems to agree that under the statute, we now have a late filed return. The question the court will turn to was there reasonable cause for filing the return late? And in a turn of logic that seems to defy most minds, but which probably makes sense to those of us who have been around taxes for a while, we are going to determine if a reasonable cause for late filing the return would be that we timely filed the return, but we only fouled up because we didn't get the proof we needed that the return had been timely filed that would have automatically invoked 7502. So we're now going to backdoor be able to invoke getting out of this penalty. Note, we still don't have a timely filed return, but we can get out of this penalty by having reasonable cause for filing late. Because we exercised adequate business care, we met the terms of the regulation. Now, the court went on to note that petitioner, the Gregorians, testified he was unaware the return had not been received and processed within a reasonable time from the date that he claimed the return was filed. He became concerned when he failed to receive the refund of the claimed overpayment in the amount of $10,688. It is for that reason the petitioners mailed a return clearly labeled as a duplicate return, which the IRS received on July 16th. This presents us with a number of key facts the court used to essentially determine the return was probably timely filed, which would give them reasonable cause for late filing the return. And yes, don't try to follow that logic. Again, it's guaranteed to drive anyone batty who tries to follow those lines too closely. But a couple of key issues were in play. Number one, there was a significant refund due to the taxpayers. Therefore, it does not seem to make sense why the taxpayers who apparently received that return around October 12th, and certainly the preparer's records would give a pretty good indication of when the preparer had delivered the return to the taxpayers, why the taxpayers would have set on that return with a $10,000 refund due to them for another 9 months before filing the return. That, to the court, didn't really seem to make sense. Secondly, they clearly marked the next return duplicate, meaning that they were concerned there was a return in process and the IRS hadn't yet processed it. It was clearly marked as duplicate. It was clear from day one this was a duplicate return. So this did not appear to be a return that the taxpayers had, oops, discovered in a desk drawer, we forgot to file this, and mailed it out quickly, but rather a new copy of the return that had been created, perhaps by their preparer, and which then had been filed with the IRS in July, and which the IRS subsequently processed in July. So the court goes on to say, the court is hard-pressed to believe that a taxpayer would willfully neglect to file a timely return where the taxpayer had claimed an explanation of more than $10,000. The court goes on to note that respondent, meaning the IRS, offered no explanation to the contrary. So the court found the only story being offered was the taxpayer's. The taxpayer's story was plausible, and the IRS had not given any sort of explanation that the court felt was plausible for why this return would not have been timely filed. The court finds, therefore, there was no willful neglect by petitioners in the late filing of their 2001 return. Note, there was no willful neglect in late filing the return, because the court found they had timely filed it, even though legally they had not timely filed it. The court goes on to say that satisfies one prong of Section 6651A1. The other element is that the burden was due to reasonable cause. The petitioner's testimony is credible as to circumstances. So they both found that, in fact, there was no willful neglect, so they did not willfully neglect to file the return, meaning the simple fact the court believed it had been filed was good enough to show you couldn't willfully neglect to file a return if you had actually filed it. But secondly, was there reasonable cause? Because you have to both show it was not due to willful neglect and you had reasonable cause. And here the court could have been nastier and said, well, reasonable cause, you know, it's not reasonable, it's not prudent from a business standpoint to file without the proof required by 7502. The court did not hold to that standard, saying everybody should get certified and registered mail, but rather held it was reasonable cause, essentially, that you acted prudently by dropping the return in the mailbox. We don't know for sure how it was filed, but it could have been as simple as being dropped in a mailbox somewhere or being left for a mail carrier to pick up. On this record, the court finds petitioners mailed the return on October 12, 2002, and the failure of that return being delivered to the IRS in a reasonable time period was due to circumstances not within petitioner's control. Therefore, the failure to file the duplicate return timely was due to reasonable cause. The petitioners, therefore, are sustained on that issue, which turned out to be good for them because they lost on all the other issues and had a tax bill due. This at least meant they did not owe a failure to file penalty on top of the tax bill that was now due because of the issues they had faced under this failure to file penalty provision the IRS had inserted. Now, what does this mean, that certified mail is much ado about nothing? Well, a couple things to remember. First, we are talking about a tax court summary case. This case cannot be cited as precedent. It's not a case that you could use to prove, shall we say, to the tax court in the future that, oh, that's reasonable cause. The good news is the judge found this was reasonable cause and that you had a reasonable cause argument, but that doesn't mean it necessarily would hold up in the future, but it should at least give you an arguing point with the agent. Second, remember, the court still found they had late filed the return. There are certain elections, certain actions, certain things that must take place or be on a timely filed return. Had the Gregorians had one of those items on this return, we still would have faced the problem their return was not timely filed. If there is no reasonable cause provision available for failing to make that election or for failing to include that document with your return, the Gregorians might still find a negative consequence to being unable to establish the timely filing of their return. Therefore, especially in cases for returns that carry with them important documents that need to be filed or elections that need to go with a timely filed return, certified or registered mail still proves to be an incredibly important tool that you need to advise your clients to use. Second, clearly the taxpayers would have saved themselves some grief had they had certified or registered mailing receipts or other documentation that's considered proof of filing. Over the years, we've had cases arise from time to time where the IRS claimed not to have received a document. The sheer number of documents the IRS received over the year and the sheer number of documents mailed to the IRS means there's going to be some automatically that are going to be lost, misplaced, either by the Postal Service or the IRS. However, in those cases, we have always found that the minute we submit the certified mail receipt with the little stamp on it, the postmark from the local post office showing the timely filing, the issue is dropped. The Gregorians could have eliminated this from one of their issues at trial by essentially having that little document, which almost certainly would have eliminated the problem before they went to trial. But the case is instructive in noting that sometimes in cases where you think you know the law and you have solid authority, maybe you need to change your thinking just slightly. You would be correct if you were in the Second or Sixth Circuits to conclude there was no way the taxpayers could prove timely filing of the return, despite the fact it appears it had been timely filed. If you read the Second and Sixth Circuit decisions literally, even if every judge sitting on the appellate panel had seen the taxpayer mail the physical return into the U.S. Postal Service, that would not be sufficient proof. The same thing, the issue becomes, therefore, that we had an issue where we had a problem, it had not been timely filed, but we looked at the exception to the penalty, continue reading in the code, and you find that to apply that penalty, not only does the IRS have to show the return was late filed, but they have to be able to contend with the taxpayer's proof, the taxpayer offers, that there was reasonable cause for the situation that gave rise to the late filing. And in this case, that reasonable cause was, as absurd as it seems, that they timely filed the return. If you think outside the box, you get around the issue that we cannot consider, which an agent would probably tell you for certain in the Second and Sixth Circuits, and very likely in other circuits as well, that we simply can't consider that. The only way you can prove timely filing is to have the certified mail receipt. What you point out in this case is, well, that's fine, let's accept that, but we can still argue reasonable cause, and as Gregorian points out, reasonable cause, we have to meet two prongs. Was there willful neglect? If we have evidence that it was truly filed, that would defeat willful neglect without question. So then the second point was, did they act with reasonable prudence and exercise reasonable business care? And our argument at that point is going to be they gave it over to the United States Postal Service, something that the vast majority of United States taxpayers do, something that, frankly, if you read the IRS's own instructions, they seem to suggest you should do. So that would seem to us to meet the reasonable prudence standard, in which case we would argue that the 6651 penalty, while we cannot defeat it by showing timely filing, technically, we can defeat it because we have reasonable cause for the late filing, the reasonable cause being the absurd reason that we truly timely filed the return. Now, this has been Tax Update for Saturday, July 16, 2006. Tax Update is brought to you by Limeburg Services, located on the web at www.limeburgservices.com. We look forward to talking to you next week when we'll take on another tax topic. This has been Tax Update.